You know, thank God the God that most people believe in isn't. Ralph Waldo Emerson actually said that. And Ralph Waldo Emerson was actually a great influence on Unity and the New Thought movement in general. So you may know his name through his work in Transcendentalism and elsewhere. But really a big influence. And so if you want to know more about a little bit behind our movement and some of the influences, we're going to cover some of that in the Unity Basics class that starts June 5th. But during this series, we're actually going to address some of the foundational teachings of Unity, the five basic principles. So you may know, if you've been around for a while, or you might catch on pretty quickly, that Unity is not particularly dogmatic. We don't have a long list of ways that you need to operate or believe. But because of that, early on, the great-granddaughter of the Fillmores, Connie Fillmore Bazzi, the Fillmores are our co-founders, said, you know, she was getting all these questions about what is unity, what is unity, and it was hard to sort of encapsulate it. Do you ever have that that issue with folks that are asking you? And so maybe these principles will help you like they did her, because she then decided, I need to write something down that just sort of offers some guidance, some guiding principles. She never imagined that these five principles would be pervasive throughout the whole Unity movement and so many churches would use them as a foundational guiding principles, but they really work. And they really kind of encapsulate what we teach. So I thought it important that we come together and have another look at these as a community, those of you who are familiar. And if you're new, you're right on time, because you get to walk through with us these foundational teachings. So the five principles in sum, here's my short version, is the first is about the nature of God, and so we call that God is. And the second about the nature of us, and the short form of that is I am. And the second, and the third, fourth, and fifth are supports to these basic principles. It is think it, in other words, we are co-creating in this world. Pray it, affirmative prayer and meditation is a key practice, and live it. We need to walk the talk, right, to embody the principles, to take action. So that's kind of where we're going over the next 5 weeks. And today we're starting with that first principle, which you may not even realize we say the statement of faith every week, that is that first principle. And you might recognize it as there is only, you can start with me, one presence and one power in the universe and in my life, the all-loving goodness of God. Yeah, so every week we stand on that principle that kind of starts out all the rest of the principles that says, what is this essence of God? Hard to describe, right? Hard to put words on it. It's always limiting when we start to describe this thing that just is. But we still try because we want to be able to understand intellectually so that we can then really be it, live it, as that fifth principle says. So this idea in this principle, in this statement of faith that we speak, is that there is an all-pervading essence. There is this essence throughout the universe that is an essence of goodness. And it's everywhere present, omniscient, knows all things, everywhere present, and omnipotent, all-powerful. So what does that mean? That means there's no other power in the universe. Right? So somebody might say who's new to Unity, well, what about the devil? What about evil? Well, in our teachings, absolute truth, absolute good is dispels any darkness, dispels any sense of evil. It doesn't mean that we are turning a blind eye to things that happen in the world that do not feel okay or right or in integrity or kind or even feel horrific. It's not about turning a blind eye. It's about seeing those things and also seeing through them, seeing deep into them, seeing the possibilities that might come from them. It's not always the way we want things to happen in our lives and in our world, but there is almost always, we might think, and I'm suggesting always, some nugget of goodness in there. That's what we mean by God being everywhere present. So you might think of some disaster that, you know, affects us all. For example, 9/11. I mean, the whole world really felt the ripple, right, of what happened in 2001 on September 11th. And do you remember where you were? Everybody remember where? Yeah, a lot of you do remember where you were. I happened to be in ministerial school in prayer with a small group during that time. And our faculty member poked her head in and said, "Something big has happened in the world. Keep praying. And when you complete, come upstairs and we're going to share together what's going on and pray together." So I feel really grateful that that's the space I was in at that time. And I was with people of a consciousness of prayer. And one of those people was one of my classmates and actually my roommate, Robin. And I had seen Robin through a lot of different things, and I always thought of her as just the embodiment of faith. I mean, this woman just walked and talked principle, you know? She was like those good old Unity early timers that really stood, like May Roland and Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, that stood on principle, you know? And so I was really surprised to see Robin sort of crumble at this experience of 9/11, you know. She began to inconsolably cry, and she started to say, keep going, why would God allow this? Where is God in this? She was having a crisis of faith. And you know, those are rich opportunities, if we take them, to evolve our notion of God and evolve our own soul and our own spirit and our own walk, if we are willing to meet it, which Robin did. And moved through that crisis of faith. And what she discovered is she was living off this old tape that God is a superhero who's going to swoop in and save the day. And if God doesn't come in and save the day, then God must not be ever present or must not be here or must not be all powerful. Anybody have that idea of God, the superhero? Yeah. Yeah, we love our superheroes, right? And we love the idea that there is some entity that is like the great superhero that is watching over the world. But the truth is, and we'll talk a lot more about this next week when we talk about who we are, that we have been called to be this in the world. So these teachings aren't for everyone. It requires a lot of responsibility, really, to be the essence of this in the world, this essence of this goodness and this power and this presence. Now, this doesn't mean it stops with us. There is an allness to God and an eachness to God, right? Each of us. And yet there is also a collective and allness, a spirit that is permeable through all of life and that creates and that we co-create with, which is the third principle that we'll talk about in a couple of weeks. So Robin's experience was really a good unfolding for her as to what her notion is. And it reminded me of what Reverend Ellen Davenport is a Unity teacher and minister, and she wrote this book, The Five Principles, which we actually have in our bookstore. And it's really a handy guide because it's updated language. So we have really, you know, good classics in Unity, but it's nice to have some modern language put to these principles that really hold this foundation of who we are. So Ellen suggests in her book that we need a God for grown-ups, that a lot of us are still living with the God that we were taught when we were children, right? So that God is generally the sort of either the superhero or at least the almighty parent. And when we cast it into the almighty parent, there's often this sense of punishment and reward. And so either, you know, we've done something naughty, kind of a Santa Claus type thing too, right? And we're going to get coal in our stocking, or we've done something good and we're going to get gifts that will serve us in our lives. And so we tend to continue to hold these old ideas. And Ellen says, if you have not visited your notion of God in the last 10 years, it's time. So I also want to encourage you to consider maybe this week, even if you're not a journaler, maybe you'll take this on as an exercise, to just take a moment to write your own personal credo on the nature of God. I believe God is, and just see what comes. It'll be interesting, I think, for you to see what do you imagine, what do you think of, what do you describe as your God, and then to look at it and see, how do I live this? And how am I sort of out of alignment with it? Where do I participate with my notion of God? And where do I sometimes stray from that notion or not really walk the talk or embody this sense of this principle? Where am I not thinking it, feeling it, praying it, living it? And where am I? celebrate those places where we are. So this is one of the ways these principles become living, breathing principles. Because if unity is nothing else, it is a creed for life, right? It's about living it. It's not so much about intellectualizing the beliefs, although that is a part of understanding. It's a part of the process. It starts here, and then it sort of, then we feel it, then we know it, and then we speak it, right? And then we embody it, we act it in the world. So that's really where we want to be headed. So as Ellen prompts us then to think about this, I read in Huffington Post, Rob Weitzman wrote about his notion of God, and he said, "I harbor this old myth that says that God is out there somewhere, and I have to work hard to pray him down here, or her down here." you ever have that idea? So there's this sense of this very aloof, distant. William Cameron was an early Unity writer, and he said that he was taught not to practice the presence of God, but to practice the absence of God. I thought that was fascinating. So I began to think, really, what did he mean by that? I thought, wow, me too. Maybe all of you. In a way, we've been taught that there is this very aloof, very distant God that we've sometimes put the face on, that maybe we got from Michelangelo's, on the walls of the Sistine Chapel at the Vatican, the idea of the man with the long gray beard that sort of looks like Father Time, reaching out to touch Adam and create Adam from that source. But in whatever ways we've gotten either images or ideas, it is true, I think, that many of us were taught to practice the absence of God, that God is somehow very distant and at some point might come down and find us doing something we shouldn't be doing. It's like the old joke, Jesus is coming, look busy. So it's like there's always sort of this sense of, am I doing it right, or, oh, I'm doing it right now, is God looking, So there's this sort of this old paradigm that a lot of us are still working with, even if we've been in unity for decades. Where we really find it is when the rubber hits the road. When the difficult things happen in life, pay attention to the way you pray. Because I have found that a lot of times I'm all for that affirmative prayer, but boy, dear God, please, I'll go to that begging space really quick when things hit, when the rubber hits the road, so to speak, or things get difficult. So we can see for ourselves, am I really thinking, speaking, acting the principle? And what do I even think it is? So we got to start there. What is this sort of credo for our lives? There has been this evolution of the idea of what spirit is throughout history, and we can see it encapsulated in the Hebrew and the Christian Bible, this sort of evolutionary process that happened. Early on, there was this idea of many gods, and it was very confusing because it was sort of got into this my God's better than your God thing, like the playground talk, and this sort of feuding and competition about different aspects, really it wasn't aspects, it was different gods. But when we began to form this idea of a one God, even in Hinduism where we see many aspects or many faces of God, there's still a one God. And even in Christianity where you have this idea of Trinity, there's different aspects, but there's still a one God concept. All the Abrahamic traditions, Islam, Christianity, Judaism, came into this idea of one God. And it simplified things. It really made it a little bit easier and clearer for us that we were communicating somehow with one entity, which we now know in unity as one principle, essentially, an all-pervading principle, with these different faces that we say, power, presence, wisdom, love, right? Different aspects or qualities that we are interacting with. So there was that idea, and then it moved into, okay, so it's this one God, and then that one God is like that almighty parent. And so there's that punishment and reward thing that went on. And then it moved to, remember when the Israelites were wandering around after they had come out of Egypt and they were in the wilderness for like 40 years before they came into the Promised Land, and they would bring along with them the Ark of the Covenant. you remember that? So the ark would go with them everywhere they went. And I'm doing this because I'm imagining these sort of like pallbearer kinds of handles, and then, you know, the ark, and God was with them. God was symbolically, and maybe some of them believed literally, in the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant. And they would bring God with them. So God was with us. God's no longer distant and not even just an almighty parent, but now God is with us all the time. But not inside of us yet, just with us, right? So it's sort of like a talisman, you know? If you ever have like a pocket angel or a rock or something from nature or a cross or a rosary or special symbols or pictures, whatever it is that maybe gives you that outpicturing, that might for you feel like, oh yeah, I've got God now in my pocket, right? And I find those things helpful as a reflection for myself too. The key is we don't get attached to that. It's like, really, literally, this is it, you know? And if I lose my rock, I lost God. That's going to be troublesome, right? So I just went on a tangent in my mind about this little joke about these kids, but I'm not sure if I can remember the whole joke, so I'm coming back to the rock. So those rituals that we have may be helpful to us, those altars and those symbols. The key is that we don't get stuck on it, so that we're not, you know, thinking, I can only pray if I have my candle and my, you know, pictures of the gods and goddesses I love, or whatever it is, those who have gone before, or, you know, we don't need our special chair. We can pray anywhere because God is where we are, right? Because God is everywhere present. So that's kind of where we went from God is with us as a human, you know, consciousness to God can be one of us, as was embodied by Jesus. Many stopped right there and said, special, right? This is the special one where God could be within. But in unity, we say, no, that proved to us that we can all be that. And so that became the teachings that we took on, which are the teachings that Jesus shared with us. So that became sort of that, the embodiment, which, like I said, we'll talk about more next week. But this process is not necessarily just over like this, right? This evolution doesn't just happen that easily. A lot of times, it's a process that brings us through an experience. So, for example, this idea of disaster happens, trauma happens in our lives, and we say, why would God let that happen? Or where is God in this? But the question is, really for us, to look for the goodness in the situation, right? To hold the space for the goodness to emerge. Where was God in 9/11? Not necessarily, or definitely not, the cause of the disaster, but present. Didn't you see God everywhere present? In the paramedics, in the firefighters, in the people praying, in the people there, in the people reaching out their hands for comfort of those who were grieving. And all those helpers, all those people who rally to give of their service are the presence of God, right? All of us, maybe far away from New York City at the time, who were holding a space, were a part of that presence, that fabric that united a city, a country, and a world for the all-loving goodness of God. So how could it happen? Why would it happen if God is everywhere present? Anybody have an idea? Free will. Because we are given the gift of free will. We have the opportunity to share the power, to share the goodness, to share and be the presence. And because we are given that gift and that opportunity, we can make choices that are in alignment with Spirit or that aren't so conscious of Spirit, right? That are out of ignorance, out of fear, out of all the things that is really a practice of the absence of. The separation idea is, you know, the greatest sin, if you will. And in unity, sin for us just means missing the mark. It's just making a mistake. William Cameron, the unity writer that I referred to, says we are only punished by our mistakes, not for them. There's nothing outside of us punishing us for bad behavior. It's our own choices that allow us to rewrite our path, right? And we don't have to be hard on ourselves. We can just say, oops, I see where I didn't know, and now I know. What's a little harder is when we know that we know and we choose anyway. You know what I mean? That old habit, that old behavior, that thing we know that doesn't serve us or doesn't serve others, and we just do it because it's familiar or it's comfortable, but there's a part of us that just knows that doesn't work. It doesn't work anymore in this relationship. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for my body, whatever the scenario is. And so then we begin to write our path, because when we come then into alignment, everything clicks, you know? Everything in life works when we are in that flow and that alignment, and things are so much more easy and effortless because we're in the flow. So that's the sweet spot, right? That's where we want to be living, is in that space. But sometimes we just get offline. You know, one of the times I was in that complete place of ignorance, even though it was like so obviously in front of my face, was the first time I went to therapy. And I had just gotten out of a relationship, and my heart was just really sad. And I came to this therapist, and I said, you know, every time I go home to Chicago, I go back to our condo, and I just feel all this sadness and heaviness. And he said the simplest thing to me. He told me a little story. He said, you know, a circus performer went to the doctor and said, every time I go like this, my arm hurts. And so the doctor said, don't do that. And he said, oh, okay. And I was like, wow. I could actually just stop going back to the condo in Chicago. You know, it's just, it can be so obvious for us sometimes, right? But we have to sometimes hear that wisdom through, that spiritual wisdom comes through all of us, right? So I needed to hear it, and it was right there in front of me, but I could not see it, could not hear it, could not recognize the idea of being kind to my own heart. Wow, what a novel idea. I grew up in a culture and a family that told me you move on when bad things happen. You get over it. Anybody relate to that? Yeah, no room for grief here. Come on, we got other things to do. And instead, it was like, oh, wow, I could just do something kind. I could just stop doing that, and it wouldn't hurt so much. So sometimes it's just we truly don't know until we know. And then we can choose to awaken. Then we can choose to make a different path, to be kinder or more gentle with ourselves until we do feel healed. And then we can move on when it's really time, in a natural flow of spirit's compassion and love. So that's the kind of thing that, you know, happens with us every day, right? Every day we have so many choices before us, so many decisions we can make. And we can make them in that joyful, easy flow, or we can make it really hard, or we can ignore our better guidance and our intuition when we know better. And then we learn. It doesn't work so well that way. So we don't have to be hard on ourselves, as I say. We can just step back in. So God obviously is not a rewarder. God is not a punisher. But we ourselves can write our own paths. You know, we always say that 20/20 vision is, you know, in hindsight, right? In hindsight, there's 20/20 vision. I love in this community that there was a 20/20 process of visioning that went on. And then what came out of that, looking, taking an honest look at what's here, what's been here, what needs to go, and what wants to come in, that this year was claimed 2017 as the year of wholeness and happiness at Unity of Walnut Creek. Did you know that? So it came out of this visioning and this kind of hindsight too, to say, yeah, this is where we are, this is where we've been, this is where we want to go. Let's claim it. Let's affirm that truth. That's our fourth principle, the power of affirmative prayer and meditation at work. So I want to invite you to have a visualization. So if you just want to close your eyes and get comfortable for a moment. And just taking a moment to just find your breath and the essence of your heart. Seeing yourself there, centered in that heart space. And just call to your heart or your mind any challenge that you've been working with recently. You might even be surprised at what comes if you just allow the space to bring forth some challenge, some little slight even, or unfinished business. And take a moment to really feel it, to feel the feelings, or if there are any thoughts present, to think the thoughts around it. And now I invite you to speak this truth, this release statement. This situation has no power over me. That's the truth. This situation has no power over me. And now just allow its safe passage through your mind. Just see it sort of moving through your mind. If it helps you, it goes out one of your ears, or just see it passing through. And in its wake is just pure light. It's as easy as this to heal ourselves. Because the truth is the all-powerful, all-loving presence of spirit is all there is. And so when you're ready, I invite you to come back into this space. All there is this presence. All there is this essence of goodness, this power that is light and love. In absolute truth, that's all there is. There are appearances and temporary conditions that seem contrary to that. But this is how we work the principle. We see those things. We acknowledge those temporary appearances, and we see past them to the truth, the absolute truth that is there, that there is goodness, that there is a power greater than this, and I will not allow this to have power over me anymore. I won't allow it to rule my mind, my heart, my body. I let it go and let the light come in to heal whatever needs to be healed. You know, it's like gravity. Gravity pulls us closer to it. We can participate with the principle and be safe and feel pretty grounded. We can ignore the principle and we're going to fall down and get hurt, right? If we keep ignoring the principle of gravity and we keep falling down and getting hurt enough, we're probably going to look for somebody to help us understand the principle so we can participate in it. Same thing with spiritual principle. It's that simple. We participate and we won't fall down and get hurt so much. We'll be safe and we'll be in the flow. And isn't that where we all want to be? This presence is everywhere. It's in us. Everywhere present. Let's speak it together. The affirmation is, the goodness of God permeates every iota of my world. Let's say it together. The goodness of God permeates every iota of my world. And so it is.